Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
Once again, I'd like to thank all of you for coming, as well as thanking Rabbi Lipner and Shari Tzvila for putting together such a fantastic event. We partner a lot with Shari Tzvila, and every time that I've been here, it's been an absolute pleasure. So thank you all very much for that. Thank you also to Rabbi Torchiner, who himself was running off to conclude his son's bar mitzvah, in a sense. So mazel tov to the Torchiners. One thing I'm going to add to his cheer, if I could say so, is you will notice on the tables in front of you, there are these green flyers with all sorts of interesting colors on them and symbols. That's actually our next big event. On December 25th, we're having a full-day session on 10 heroes and 10 villains from Tanakh to celebrate our 10th anniversary as a Beit Midrash. If you wanted to hear more about Yael, I believe she is one of the heroes that we're talking about on the program. So you're definitely welcome back on December 25th to join us anywhere, as you can see in front of you, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. We have a whole load of different sessions. If you have your favorite hero, your favorite villain, you can come for that. Or you can just stay for people that you may not have heard of before. So you're certainly all welcome. Let's move on back towards Chanukah, Brishus Rabbi Lipner, and my other Beit Midrash fellows and rabbis. When you looked at my title, you're probably like, oh no, gosh, this guy missed the boat. It's a Chanukah shiur, and he thinks we're giving a shiur on Megillah. What's going on? And truth be told, what is this shiur about? We don't lay a Megillah on Chanukah. We don't read a Megillah. There's no text of Chanukah that we recite on Chanukah. But in fact, we're going to talk about it. Now, the reason you would say that Chanukah doesn't have a Megillah is because of what the Gemara tells us. The Gemara in Yoma 29a in source number 1 tells us, it's talking about Lamnatzeach Alayelat HaShachar, one of the Parakim of Tehillim, which we relate to Purim, which talks about the Ayelat HaShachar. Amar of Asi Lama Nimshla Esther LeShachar. Why was Esther likened to dawn, or to the dawn star? Lomar Lecha, to tell you, Ma Shachar Sof Kol HaLayla, just as the dawn is the conclusion of the night. When dawn comes, you know the night's over. So too, af Esther sof kol hanisim. So too, Esther was the end of all of the miracles. Okay? The last miracle that the Jewish people experienced, says the Gemara, was Purim. Now you all look up, and the Gemara looks up and says, what? V'ha'ika Chanukah. There were miracles that took place after Purim. One of the ones that we celebrate even is Chanukah. Why is Esther considered to be the end of all miracles? So the Gemara says, no. We weren't saying that it's the last miracle that actually took place. Nitna lichtov ka'amrinan. It's true that there were additional miracles that happened post-Purim, but none of those are recorded in Tanakh anymore. Tanakh ends, so to say, the last miracle of Tanakh is the miracle of Purim. Chanukah, on the other hand, is not included in Tanakh. There may be apocryphal books that do talk about Chanukah, and there are. It's not that there may be. There are the books of Maccabees. But these are not books which are included in our tradition, and therefore the Gemara calls Esther and the story of Purim, Sof Kol HaNisim, the end of all miracles, because these other miracles are not written down within Jewish tradition. Traditionally, we look at Maccabees not as a Jewish book, but as a book that's outside of the Bible. It wasn't canonized because, for all that it may be historically accurate or not, I'm not here to discuss that today, it's not considered so much part of our tradition. Now, here's something very interesting. That would have been cool and true, except that we have this very, very interesting Megillah called Megillat Antiochus. You may have heard of it, you may have not heard of it before. Just a quick summary from Wikipedia. You can look at it down on your sheets. But basically, it tells the story of Hanukkah. It tells us of the battles that were waged by the Hashmonaim. It tells us about the miracles that took place in that time. And it's something that really seems to have a very strong Jewish connection, a Jewish tint to it. So what is going on here? On the one hand, it seems to be the end of all miracles at Purim, and therefore we don't have any books in our Tanakh about Chanukah. On the other hand, we seem to have some sort of a Jewish traditional book. And we'll first focus on talking about this book. I'll give you a little bit of a background on the book, and then we'll talk about why it might be there and what it might accomplish, especially since Purim is supposed to be the last miracle that we write about. And once again, this is not the same as the books of Maccabees. This is something different called any of the names you see there. Scroll of Antiochus, Megillat Chashmonaim, Megillat Chanukah, Megillah Yevanit, all sorts of different names. So, looking back at history, first of all, when was this composed? What are we looking at in terms of a composition date? And we'll look at some more scholarly sources, we'll look at some more traditional sources. So Rav Sadia Gaon opens with the earliest date that anybody has seen. He says, in source number 3, Uchmoshe chatvu b'nei chashmonai Yehuda v'shimon v'yochanan v'yonatan ve'elazar b'nei Matityahu sefer b'meh she'avar aleihem hadomeh le'sefer Daniel b'lashon kasdim. He says, you know who wrote this book, this Megillat Antiochus or Megillat b'nei chashmonai? It was actually the sons of the Chashmonaim. It was written at the time of the Chanukah miracles. It was written by the five sons of Matityahu who won the war. Now, this is actually quite problematic. The most problematic part of it, and the reason why this can't actually be taken literally, is because he's suggesting that it was written by their family. Well, unfortunately, the Megillah tells of the demise of a number of the family members at the beginning of the Megillah. Most interestingly, Yehuda HaMaccabee, who we look at as the sort of savior and the ferocious Maccabee, is actually killed quite early on in the battles. So it can't actually have been written by all of these people, but on the other hand, he certainly seems to be following a tradition that this was written very, very close to the times of Hanukkah, not necessarily by all of the exact people he lists, but certainly by them and their sons and their family immediately following the miracle. And this is Rav Sadia Gaon's opinion. This is sometime around the 10th century that he's saying this, 11th century. On the other hand, we have an earlier source from the Gaonim. In the Sefer Halachot Gedolot, Rabbi Shimon Kayara writes the following. Ziknei Beit Shammai v'ziknei Beit Hillel, heim katvu Megillat Beit Chashmonai, v'ad achshav lo ala ledorot, ad shiyamor kohen la'urim v'tumim. The oldest of the pupils, Ziknei Beit Shammai v'ziknei Beit Hillel, the elders of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel of their schools wrote Megillat Beit Chashmonai, which we are identifying with Megillat Antiochus. But here's what he says, very interesting. But up to the present time, I'm reading from the translation of source number 4, nothing is known of the Megillah, and this state of incognizance will last until the priest shall appear with the Urim and Tumim. What he's saying is, yes, I have a tradition that there was this famous Megillat B'nei Chashmonai written by the elders of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. On the other hand, we don't have it. He's never seen this. He's never heard of this. So unlike Rav Sadia Gaon, who was first of all working with the text, he actually translated the text from Aramaic into Arabic for his people, so he was really looking at it a little bit more scholarly. There's certainly a tradition involved in who wrote it, but reading the text himself, he came to the conclusion that it was written by the family of the Chashmonaim. On the other hand, the Halachot Gedolot has a tradition of this, but he's never actually seen the text. So he's working solely on what he had been passed down to him as saying, yes, there was this book that describes the miracles of Hanukkah. On the other hand, we don't have that around. When you look to, you know, more recent sources and scholarly sources, Louis Ginsburg makes a very interesting point in the 1906 Jewish Encyclopedia under this entry. And he points out something very, very interesting. He says, the much-discussed scroll of the House of the Hasmoneans, which it is alleged, the Halachot Gedolot quotes, is purely imaginary. So first of all, he points out a problem with the Halachot Gedolot. For not only does the manuscript read in this passage, Megillat Ta'anit, okay, so he says, number one, if you look at some of the manuscripts of Halachot Gedolot, it doesn't say Megillat Beit Chashmonai, that which we had in source number four. It actually says Megillat Ta'anit. So that's one problem he points out with this understanding. Number two, even if the expression Megillat Beit Chashmonai of the printed text be adopted, the passage would then bear the very opposite meaning to the one that has been deduced from it. He says, this would teach us that what we have as Megillat Antiochus, as he's going to explain, cannot be the one that was written by Hillel and Shammai. Meaning, scholars had brought this as proof, say, look, the Halachot Gedolot talks that it was written by Hillel and Shammai. He's opposed to that, he believes it was written later, but he says, let's think about this for a second. The Halachot Gedolot is telling us that in the 8th century, this doesn't exist, and as far as he knows, it won't ever be revealed. What then does that say about the text that we know did exist a century or two later? It's probably not the same one, because if it existed at that time, he wouldn't be telling us that it didn't exist. So he says it must have come into existence, according to him, sometime in between when the Halachot Gedolot wrote about it, where it was just a tradition that he had and never to appear, and when Rav Sadia Gaon talks about how great it is and translates it into Arabic. So he's actually of the opinion that it was written sometime in between them, sometime around the 9th century or so, which is quite a late date of authorship. There are other scholars as well who discuss it. Some of them come to conclusions similar to the Halachot Gedolot, and that it was only found in between those two times, which can make sense with the Halachot Gedolot. There are those scholars who do agree and say that it was written much, much later on. Either which way, we know it appears somewhere between the 8th century and 10th century, and who may have been written by? Good question. That's why we have a number of traditional sources. Scholarly sources don't identify particular writers that wrote it later on, but sort of the times at which it was written. At any rate, I mean, he continues in the second paragraph of source number 5. This view also nullifies all speculation the Talmud and the Midrashim drew upon a book of the Hasmoneans. We're still on page 1. We're just about to turn the page. At any rate, it may be asserted that Megillat Antiochus was written at a time when even the vaguest recollection of the Maccabeans had disappeared. An additional proof of the same facts is furnished by the language and subject matter of the work himself. Again, he believes this is a very, very late composition. The determination of the exact date of the scroll is more difficult. If the above-mentioned passage in the Halachot Gedolot, as we said, really refers to a book of the Hasmoneans, the only possible period could have been from the middle of the 8th to the middle of the 9th century, for as has been said, Halachot Gedolot does not presuppose a book that existed contemporaneously with itself, as we explained. Okay, so we've talked about when it may have been written, but what is its significance to Jewish tradition, other than the fact that perhaps the elders of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel wrote it, or the sons of the Chashmonaim wrote it, or someone later on wrote it, and it was certainly adopted, but where do we see this? And here, a number of tidbits have been collected from a wide variety of Jewish literature, including some Sidurim, by a Natan Fried. I don't know if he's a professor, I don't know if he's a rabbi. He didn't have a title in front of his name in Rabbi Sperber's Minhagei Yisrael, which I took some of this content from. So he actually collected all sorts of stuff discussing this Megillat Bnei Chashmonai, Megillat Antiochus. And here are a couple of sources that talk about how much this had been integrated to part of the Hanukkah celebration. We think, yes, Megillat Esther is a central part of Purim. We don't think, we've probably even never heard of Megillat Antiochus yet. Says Rabbi Isaiah of Trani, again, writing in, 13th, 14th century Italy. V'chein nami makom, source number 6, Chenohagin Megillat Antiochus b'Chanukah, just say Likrot, I believe. Ein ra'oi levarech aleha mipnei she'ein shoresh chova klal. He says, well, I'll tell you something. It's clear from what he's saying that there were many communities around him that were reading this. He says, in those places where you had this Megillah being read on Chanukah, make sure you don't make a bracha on it. Okay, why? Because it has no background, it has no roots in Jewish tradition. How dare you make a bracha of reading the Megillah, or perhaps as we're going to see, a bracha after it, thanking God for the miracles that took place? Because it has no source really in our tradition. Maybe a nice book to read, but there's no mitzvah of reading Megillah on Hanukkah. This is what he had to tell the communities around him. He said, guys, stop making brachas. I mean, you can see how accepted and how integral this must have been at that point in time if this is a question that he's responding to. He's saying these places, don't make a brach on it. Don't say Al Mikra Megillah. So this really was central at that time, particularly in Italy. But you can look elsewhere as well. If we look in source number 7, in the Sidur Otzer HaTfilos, it quotes from the Minhag Korfu. Megillah Ivaniti Megillat Antiochus, it says, Besidur Minhag Kappa Vektas Kihilos Kara, which is Corfu and other surrounding communities, Karasov, sorry, Katuv, Nohagin Likrot Megillat Antiochus, B'Shabbat B'Mincha, Achar Kaddish Tiskabel, Mishum Pirsume Nisa. They had the Minhag. See, the Rid, Rabbi Zeyav Trani, did not mention when they would read this and what part of the liturgy it may have been a part of. Here it's identified, they used to read it on Shabbos Chanukah, at Mincha time, towards the end of Mincha, after what we call the Kaddish Shalim, Kaddish Tzitzkabel. And in fact, he says they would read it because of Pritzim Nisa, Ve'omer. And they would say, Kol Yisrael, which is the introductory paragraph to Pirkei Avot, which was traditionally recited at that time as well. And then afterwards, they would say, V'achakach Korin Tamgila, then they would read this scroll. And it was a part of that. Does anybody know what else is read at that time around the year in different communities? Shir HaMaalot, Megillat Rut, is not traditionally read there for our Ashkenazi communities. It could be that some communities read it at that point. The Haggadah. So the Shabbat preceding Pesach, we actually read the Haggadah at that very same point. So on the one hand, this is a tradition that really introduces it into Hanukkah. On the other hand, okay, it's not, you know, the craziest thing to add in a text that we read at Mincha of Shabbos. You see, it was important, but it didn't have the same stature, let's say, in these communities as a Megillah, which you might read in the morning. Rather, they read it Shabbos afternoon, where we read the Haggadah, meaning this is something that we want to remember. We want to make note of this text. It's not a text that's per se part of the davening, but it is something that they considered important enough to insert it into the regular prayer services for these communities at these times. And this is in a totally separate community. And we continue. Very interestingly, we have source number 8 here. This is the 8th time commentary to the Yemenite liturgy. And it's quoted within that same article in Minhagei Yisrael that I mentioned earlier. And it says as follows. This is actually written, I should say this in advance, this is actually written in the body of the text of the Yemenite liturgy, which is very, very ancient, at least in terms of the Yemenite custom. On the other hand, this is actually written in a different language and in a different font than everything else in it, which led Natan Fried to suggest that perhaps it wasn't actually part of the central part of the liturgy, but rather added in by this commentary, which was on the bottom, because it only appears in this version of it. And he also wonders aloud, he says, how come no other scholars have cited this as evidence of the acceptability of this Megillat Antiochus? Well, that's probably because it's not actually part of the liturgy itself. It's simply a comment added in by this author. But either which way, he says, V'yeshe korin Megillat Antiochus b'Shabbat achar haftara. He says, wow, it even gets greater status. There were some communities, he notes, in which they read the Megillah Shabbos Hanukkah morning, after the Haftarah, sort of in the place, not replacing anything else from the davening, but along with the other holy readings. You have the reading from the Torah, you have the reading from the Haftarah, and then you had Megillat Antiochus. It was that important, and it was communities like these and others where there was really a question, do we make a bracha on it? Like, this was really, really, really a part of their Hanukkah. Just as you lit the Neirot, you also read the Megillah on Shabbat morning. That's how it worked in these communities. So this, I found, you know, very, very surprising, but very interesting nevertheless. And this is sort of what we see in terms of when it was composed first, and second of all, how prevalent a role it played within the traditions of these different communities. Now, I summarized the rest of the article for you. I'm not going to go through all of it. I'll just focus on a couple of the points. The first one I'll talk about is that first bullet point that we have, following source number 8, which is that this is actually slightly different from other accounts of the Hanukkah miracles that we see in other sources. Number one, as we said, Yehuda the Maccabee is killed at the beginning of the battle, and he's traditionally, again, the big warrior who kills everybody else and survives. In fact, if you go to some shopping malls, you can take a picture with Yehuda the Maccabee. On the other hand, it also really centralizes the miracle of the jug of oil, which is something that we don't really have in so many other sources, historical sources. We have it in the Gemara, of course, as you've heard already twice today, so good thing I'm not bringing the Gemara again. But it's something that's really featured prominently in Megillat Antiochus. Its language of composition was Aramaic. It's been translated to Arabic. It's been translated to Hebrew. The author of the article, Natan Fried, suggested that this was actually a correlation that he noted the following correlation. He said in all of those communities, and there were more than just these communities that we brought, that read Megillat Antiochus, in all of those communities that read it in the morning, alongside the Parsha, Haftorah, whatever it was, of Shabbat Hanukkah, they actually read it in Aramaic or Arabic. They did not read it in Hebrew then. On the other hand, those who were reading the Hebrew translation of it, because it was originally composed in Aramaic, actually, they're the ones who read it Shabbat afternoon at Mincha. And he suggests that there are potential halachic issues with reading a Hebrew text publicly on Shabbat morning, which would not apply to that Shabbat afternoon section. A very interesting theory, but certainly the correlation itself is noticeable, that the Hebrew one was read later on in the day, the Aramaic original, and sometimes the Arabic was read earlier on Shabbat day, not a Hebrew text in and of itself, which kind of limits the impact that it has if we're really applying sort of halachic rules to it, that's something to be talked about. You know, we're saying we don't want to read this now because it's halachically inappropriate. Something to note. There are a few other points that I have down there about how it really became read not only just as a text, but as a Megillah. It was split up into psukim. It was given nikudot. It was given trop or cantillation notes. And it was read in this way, again, in many communities, even in the different languages. I mean, Hebrew certainly had these elements of it. And in terms of what we do nowadays, it's not as widespread as we would have thought. Again, I didn't hear much about it before I started researching this. I would doubt that many of you read it in your traditional Hanukkah practices. And there are some communities where it is read. There are some Sfarim that quote this tradition and suggest reading it on Hanukkah, and there are some Hasidic communities that do read it as part of their Hanukkah celebrations, although not on Shabbat and Shul. They'll read it to themselves, perhaps. And even outside the, you know, other Ashkenazi community, sorry, even within the Ashkenazi community, it is read at some points on Hanukkah, sometimes by people just to get a flavor of what it is, and is not really widespread in most of these traditions, even where it was originally read. I did read somewhere that even the Teimanim don't read it the same way they used to, if at all, in many of their communities. Perhaps the Italians still read it in Italy. I don't remember from when I went there, but I was not there over Hanukkah, so I can't tell you. But what's very interesting is, we get back to our original question now, okay? I think we've gotten a pretty good snapshot of where this came in to our tradition. We know when it started being, at least we know when manuscripts appeared. We don't know necessarily when it was written. We know as well that many, many of the communities adopted this minhag and took it on themselves. But what happened back to our Chanukah lo nitna likatev, or lichtov? That we don't write down the miracles of Hanukkah. How did this happen, and why is it here? And I think that we can take a quick message out of the way we look at the way that this Megillah of Hanukkah both appeared, came on the scene, how it was adopted, and how it is used now. As you may have noted in a couple of the sources, and some which I didn't bring as well, we're told explicitly what the purpose of the reading of this Megillah is. And that reason is, Pirsumei Nisa, we have to publicize the Nis. I believe that this was not something intentional. It's not like someone said, boy, Hanukkah really needs a Megillah. We need to add this to Hanukkah. But rather, it was something that was an outgrowth of our Pirsumei Nisa. It was sort of, whether the tales are historical or not, and I'm not here to say one way or the other, but the point is, people wanted to be retelling the story of Hanukkah. People wanted to be retelling the miracles of Hanukkah. And it got to such a point where this was a major part of publicizing the miracle. They said, you're right, we're not telling people enough about Hanukkah. Let's bring this into Shabbos and read about it. We're not telling people enough about Hanukkah. Let's read it on one of the nights of Hanukkah. And when you think about it like that, the concept of having brachot, the concept of blessing before or after it, those are really also about Pirsumei Nisa. One of the brachot we make on a Megillah on Purim is She'asa nisim l'avoteinu. The bracha which we make at the end of the Megillah, which is even in some versions of the Chumashim and Sidurim, which they used in those communities, have Haravet Riveinu Vadanatinenu, that thanking God for basically making sure that our enemies didn't destroy us and that we were able to conquer them. So I think when it comes in this way, looking at it is actually not something in a negative way, that look, we're trying to adopt the Megillah against what the Gemara said, and we're trying to put on brachot to make it equal, but rather this was just an outgrowth of that same will for Pirsumei Nisa, and for that reason, the people who read it nowadays on the nights of Hanukkah, alongside their Chanukiah, while of course not using the light of the menorah, but the shamish, that's also something that's really, really nice, and should be emulated by us, whether or not we choose to read this Megillah or not, but to spread the light of Hanukkah to all of Klal Yisrael. Thank you.
The burn bomb sitter seems to always have it.
Okay, thank you.
Which I know is out of fashion these days.